This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to the November 29th For Your Benefit radio show. My name is Bob Lyons. I got that down. And we're here today, powerhouse show today, with Tammy Flanagan, Senior Benefit Director, NITP, GovExec columnist, knower of all things federal, and friend as a co-presenter to these webinars. Good morning, Tammy.
Good morning, Bob. Thanks for having me today.
Well, thanks for being here. And Mary Beth, Mary Beth Franklin, she comes on the show. Do you come on twice a year?
I think it's usually about once a year, but maybe you should invite me twice.
I got the message. All right. Contributing editor, investment news, been on the show for a good number of years. And I just sit back and I ask some questions and I'll let you two bang it over the net. And so why don't we start? And I think there's a fear factor. There's good news, there's bad news. And we get a number of emails in, and it seems the bad news is we won't get a COLA, or, you know, there could be a lessening of the staff and the like. But let's take a look at the COLA, because that seems to be on everybody's mind when we do the webinars, as well as the emails that we get. So what's the probability or chance that there would ever be that?
Well, the COLA, the cost of living adjustment for 2022, will be the biggest one we've seen in 40 years, 5.9%. That is huge. It means, let's say the average Social Security benefit, if it's $1,565 right now, it's going to go up about $100 a month. That's pretty good. The bad news in the future that you alluded to is concerns about the long-term financing of Social Security. The outlook has deteriorated a little bit, but frankly, that's still good news because we thought due to COVID, it would deteriorate a whole lot. But Tammy and I will be happy to jump in there to talk about the outlook of the Social Security Trust Fund and what it means for individual beneficiaries. But first, Tammy's going to explain the difference between that cost of living adjustment for Social Security and how you don't have to rush to claim your Social Security benefit to get it. Anybody who is 62 or older next year in 2022 will get that big 5.9% cost of living adjustment baked into their future benefit when they do claim. You do not have to rush to claim Social Security to take advantage of that. But I understand when it comes to federal pensions, that's a different story, right, Tammy?
Yeah, Mary Beth, that's so true. And you're right, that's a question we get all the time from federal employees, especially those who are kind of on the fence about retiring, because you'll get the question of, maybe I should move my retirement up to the end of November so I get that 5.9% COLA in January. But for a federal retiree, your COLA is based on how long you've been retired during that year. So if the COLA takes effect on December 1st and you retire the day before December 1st, you're not really going to get any of the 5.9% on your civil service or on your FERS benefit. Where, like you said, with Social Security, I love the way that they do it, so that when there's a COLA, everybody gets it. So even though I want to delay my Social Security till I'm 70, I'm getting the COLA this year because I'm over 62. So that just bolsters that future benefit that I'm going to get someday.
And but also for those people who are younger than 62 next year, there's nothing you can do about it. You can't, you know, buy into a cost of living adjustment for which you're not eligible. You have to be 62 or older in 2022 to have the benefit of this much larger than usual cost of living adjustment.
Yeah, this reminds me of back in, I think it was 2010 or 11, I had a friend of mine who was eligible to retire. She had like 37 years of government service, but she wanted just one more year. She was going to hang on one more year. And this was the year that pay raises were non-existent. Congress froze federal salaries for 3 years straight. But that was the year when there was another pretty big COLA back then, not quite as big as the one we have this year, but I think it was 3.6%. And by delaying her retirement, she missed out on both. She didn't get the COLA because she wasn't retired. and she didn't get the pay raise to help out her high three. So like you said, Mary Beth, there's no way to plan on that. If you're not eligible for it, just water under the bridge, hope for better times next year. And we really don't want to see high COLAs, because that just means we're spending more money at the grocery store and at the doctor's office and all the other places where we have to spend money, especially the gas station. So a high COLA is just an indication of higher prices.
Speaking of which, I'm going to take out my crystal ball and talking about the year after this. The way Social Security calculates the cost of living adjustment is really interesting. They take the average consumer price index for the third quarter of the year, which would be July, August, and September, and they compare it to the third quarter of the previous year. And if there is a bump, that basically translates into the cost of living adjustment. Well, as we know, we had inflation early in this year. And so we had this big 5.9% increase. But when you think about it, what does that mean for the future? To get a next year for the third quarter to get above this big index we have this year, it's quite possible we won't have a cost of living adjustment in 2023 or maybe 2024, because it has to be such a high hurdle to get above the previous year's index. That happened back in 2009. We had a big COLA, I think it was like 5.8%. And then for the two following years, there was no cost of living adjustment. So all I can say is to people 62 and older, enjoy that 5.9% in 2022, because you might not see another one for a little while.
As someone who likes to look for the silver lining and everything, what I hear with what you're saying, Mary Beth, is that if there is deflation where actually prices go down, which we kind of hope they do go down next year, that's not going to mean you're going to lose money out of your Social Security benefit. It's just not going to change. It's going to maintain its same value that it had this year.
Right. That's the advantage of Social Security. The benefits can never go down, but they only go up if there's measurable inflation.
So that's people sometimes need to be reminded that the COLA provided this lift and it's not taken away if there's less than a COLA in subsequent years?
Absolutely.
That's right. There's no such thing as deflation on both Social Security as well as your federal pension benefit, whether it be CSRS or FERS. Now, the one thing I will add to that for our FERS employees who are retiring, if you're retiring younger than age 62, if we're in for a high period of inflation for the next few years, if this does continue, keep in mind that there's no cost of living adjustment at all for most FERS retirees until age 62. So if you retire at 57 for 5 years, that's your retirement. It doesn't go up. So that's why I always put a little note of caution to FERS employees who are retiring younger than 62. I really think Congress was setting FERS up for retirement at 62 or later, in a few different ways.
Do you find that any of the folks that you tell this to or teach them, do they push their retirement date back after hearing it?
I think they give it some thought. I think, you know, if that was news to them that they didn't know there was no COLA, or if there's news to them that, hey, the FERS supplement is not the same as Social Security. Usually your Social Security benefit is going to be quite a bit more than the FERS supplement. So I think once you educate employees, then they make a wise decision based on their own circumstances.
The other point about the COLA, I hear a lot, oh, it's all politics, you know, this president or that made it happen. It has nothing to do with politics. It is a mathematical calculation. So people shouldn't feel, you know, proud or scorned one way or the other of whoever they're supporting. It's math. It's not politics.
On the financial planning side, have you ever found when you talk to folks that they really don't understand future values?
Oh, absolutely. One of the things I encourage people as a certified financial planner, I tell people that deciding how and when to claim Social Security is one of the most important benefits or decisions a retiree ever make, because for so many people, and this would be pretty much non-federal retirees, Social Security may be their only form of guaranteed income that they will get the rest of their life as private sector pensions are disappearing. So you want to make the value of that as big as possible. And Social Security is one of the few source of retirement income that is cost of living adjusted. So I usually tell particularly married people, think of it as a household decision rather than two separate decisions for individual spouses. And for most married people, I tell them have one spouse, preferably the one with the bigger benefit, wait as long as possible up until age 70 to claim their Social Security benefits, because that creates not only the largest retirement benefit while both spouses are still alive, but when one spouse dies, the bigger benefit continues as the survivor benefit, and then the smaller benefit goes away. So it often makes sense for one spouse to delay benefits up until age 70, and then the other spouse may want to go ahead and claim early if he or she's not working, brings the money into the household, takes away a bit of the sting of having the other one wait, or claim at full retirement age if they are working, because there are these earnings restrictions that if you claim Social Security benefits before your full retirement age and continue to have income from a job or self-employment, you could temporarily lose some or all of those benefits for excess earnings. But once you get to full retirement age, any earnings restrictions go away, and any benefits you may have lost due to excess earnings are restored in the form of larger monthly benefits going forward.
Here's a question. We got a fair number of questions, and I think this fits right to what you all are talking about. Please ask your guests how a couple's decision to delay receiving Social Security can be impacted by GPO.
That is a great thing. I'm going to start with Tammy because she is the expert on all things GPO and WEP.
Well, I raised my hand to say I wanted to talk on this one because I can use my own family as an example, me and my husband. My husband's under the old retirement system, which means if something happens to me or even if we're both living, he won't be able to collect any of my Social Security benefit because it's going to be reduced or offset by two-thirds of his government pension. And fortunately, his government pension's large enough that two-thirds of it is more than I'll ever see from Social Security. So the only Social Security he gets is his own, which is very small because we've got the other of the evil twins called the windfall provision, as Mike Causey likes to call them, that reduced his benefit. But, you know, his retirement is his government pension. It was designed to stand alone. It does stand alone, and it's a very nice pension based on all his 30-some years of federal service. But on my side of the coin, using your example from before, Mary Beth, where you have the couple where one spouse delays till 70, I look at it just a little bit differently because we have that GPO going on in our family where my husband won't see any of my Social Security, but yet I'm delaying mine, if possible, until I'm 70. Because while there's two of us living, we're in pretty good shape financially. You know, he has his government pension, a small Social Security. I have some income because I'm still working, which fortunately I enjoy doing. And while there's two of us, life is good. But my concern is when there's one of us, if it's me that's the last spouse standing, I get half of his pension, not all of it. So there's a big cut in my income. I'm also going to have to live on my own without the restrictions on spending because I'm the spending, he's the saver. So I want to make sure that I'm creating as much of an income as I can for myself. So delaying my Social Security, which is money I don't see right now, is going to really go far towards securing my financial future because that's something I have to look forward to that I'm not currently getting. Where if I die first, my husband gets a pay raise because I stop spending.
Don't say that out loud.
Be quiet.
Tammy, I'm so glad you shared your example because when I talk about in general, married couples should have one delay until 70 if possible. The big exception is for couples where there's one spouse who has a public pension, like an old CSRS benefit. Or there are a dozen states where public employees, including school teachers, don't pay into Social Security. Those people, I say, hey, the rules are different from you. My concept of delaying till 70 for one spouse is basically to create that bigger survivor benefit. But if your remaining spouse is not going to benefit from that survivor benefit because of these government offsets, don't do it. Take your benefit at full retirement age and enjoy it, because no sense delaying if that other spouse is not going to get the survivor benefit. Now, let me tell you my situation, which is sort of the opposite of yours.
Right.
My husband is also a federal retiree, but he was CSRS offset, which meant his first few years of employment pre-1983 with the old CSRS system. He left, Social Security reform happened. He came back. He had the option. He could take CSRS offset or FERS. He took CSRS offset, which gives him a pension, and he paid into Social Security. So he's paid in more than 30 years. All these offsets go away. But he was born in 1952. I was born in 1954. We get to talk about this other claiming strategy. People who were born before 1954 and who are married or who are eligible divorce spouses, meaning they were married at least 10 years before divorcing and are currently single, have a special claiming strategy. When someone who's born before that magic day of January 1st, 1954, reaches their full retirement age, they can say to Social Security, don't pay me my benefit. Let it keep growing by 8% a year up until age 70. But in the meantime, let me claim benefits as a spouse. Give me half of my husband's full retirement age benefit or half of my wife's full retirement age benefit. Well, in our situation, my husband could take advantage of that, but I couldn't because I wasn't old enough. So when I reached my full retirement age of 66 last year, I claimed my Social Security benefits, which many of my readers thought was blasphemy. Why did I do it? So I could trigger this spousal benefit for my husband, because although he was eligible for a spousal benefit, he couldn't get it until I claimed mine. So he has been claiming half of my full retirement age benefit. And early next year, when he turns 70, he will switch to his maximum Social Security benefit. And down the road, if he was to die first, I would step up to his larger Social Security benefit.
Wow, that's great, but it's also time to take a break. There's a lot of information to give the folks some time to think about the next question. And we should also have a commercial for the sponsor of the show, WAPA.
Federal open season isn't only about health insurance. Get life insurance for less with WAPA. WAPA has been insuring the future of federal employees for more than 75 years. WAPA can be used as a supplement or replacement for your existing policy and can cost less than Fegley. In fact, on average, members who switched from Fegley to WAPA saved over $290 a year. While you're evaluating your benefits this open season, compare the costs of WAPA and Fegley. See how much you could save on your life insurance by visiting waepa.org today.
WAPA, for feds by feds.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're here today. We did the first segment of the show. Tammy Flanagan and Mary Beth Franklin. Tammy, Senior Benefit Director, NITP. I think she's probably also known by the GovExec column. Mary Beth Franklin, CFP, graces us at least once a year to do the show. Thank you. And she's a contributing editor to Investment News. Anyway, where did we leave off, ladies?
My social security guru for many, many years, even before she knew it, because she has been in this business as long or longer than I've been in the retirement side of it. So I think we complement each other pretty nicely.
Absolutely, because if there's ever a federal retirement question, I know who to turn to.
And I've referred many people to your wonderful book that you've written on the whole subject of Social Security.
By the way, well, let's plug that book.
It's called Maximizing Your Social Security Retirement Benefits, and you can purchase it. It's an ebook at maximizingyoursocialsecuritybenefits.com.
Great. Do you get many questions after people read it?
I answer about 100 questions a week from both financial planners and individual consumers. And I do this because I consider it field research. It lets me see trends of where is the confusion. I will tell you, early on when Congress had made some changes in claiming strategies back in late 2015, just by hearing from my readers, I could see the confusing and conflicting signals and messages they were getting about how to claim benefits. And it made me more valuable that I could help people straighten out the confusion.
How about, I'm going to ask the same question to both. Mary Beth, let's do you first. What do you find that people don't understand about Social Security and you think to yourself, really, you don't know that?
Basic things. People don't understand on what your benefits are based. Your benefits are based on your top 35 years of average lifetime earnings. And those estimated benefit statements that you used to get in the mail and now can get online assume that you will continue making approximately the same amount of money now through your full retirement age. So say somebody decides to stop working at 60, but not claim until their full retirement age, their benefit may be slightly less than is on the statement because it assumed they would continue working. Or the big confusion for federal employees is the fact that if they are also entitled to a Social Security benefit, the estimated benefit they get on their statement doesn't know they're a federal employee. So they'll get an estimate of, say, I don't know, $1,500 a month. But in reality, it could be reduced by the windfall elimination provision. It could be reduced by the government pension offset if they're trying to collect as a spouse or a survivor. And there's nothing they can do about it, but it's very important for them to work with real numbers in their retirement income plan. The difference between getting $1,500 a month or $1,000 a month can make a big difference when it comes to spending in retirement. And I encourage people to get an estimate of what really they can expect. And then keep in mind, you get a Social Security benefit. If you're also enrolling in Medicare, which some federal retirees do and some don't, that's going to be deducted. And those benefits are taxable. So most people like to have some of those taxes withheld. So the difference between your gross Social Security benefit and your net can be a big difference.
Tammy, now, when you deal with the federal employees directly, what do you find in questions that you're a little surprised that they're unaware of?
Well, just to piggyback on what Mary Beth said about the high 35 years that's used to compute Social Security, I get a lot of confusion on the high 3 average salary that's used to compute both civil service and FERS benefits. In fact, it made me think this morning, I got an email from a woman who said, tell me the difference between retiring at the end of this year versus the end of January next year. She says, I'm due a step increase January 4th. There's going to be a pay adjustment on January 2nd. So should I wait till the end of January? And I said to her, I said, well, if you're doing it because of your high 3, it's really not going to make much difference whether you go the end of December, the end of January, because that's only 1 month more at that new pay rate out of 3 years. It's going to make probably, I would guess, $10 or $15 a month difference, if that, because you're also adding another month of service on top of the extra salary. So people say, well, then how long do I need to work at that new pay raise to make that really noticeable in my high 3? I said, it's noticeable every month that you work, but if you really want it to be your high 3, you'll have to work 3 more years. And by the time you do that, you'll get another pay raise, and then you're going to have to work 3 more years. Mm-hmm. And before you know it, you're going to have 67 years of federal service. So I think the high 3 is not a good barometer to decide when's it time to retire, because there's always, hopefully always going to be pay increases.
All right.
You know, the other question I get, Bob, is this concern about, oh, Social Security is running out of money. I guess I should grab benefits now while I can before it goes broke. Well, first of all, Social Security is not going bankrupt. What we're hearing about is the trust funds, which are the excess reserves that Social Security has been collecting for the last 40 years in anticipation of the baby boomers retiring. The way Social Security benefits are funded are through those FICA taxes that we all pay in our paychecks. Those FICA taxes that we pay right now are funding today's retirees' benefits. They're not funding some pot of money for our personal use in the future. Through about 2010, the FICA tax revenues were sufficient to pay all the promised Social Security benefits at that time. At that point in 2010, FICA taxes alone were not sufficient. So all the money that has been built up in the trust fund right now is about $1.29 trillion. Then they started tapping the interest on those trust funds to help pay the benefits. And that's what we've been doing for the last 10 years. This year, 2021, is the first year that FICA taxes plus interest on the trust fund is not alone sufficient to pay the benefits. So now we're going to start dipping into the actual trust fund. Over the next 13 years, as we dip into that trust fund, those reserves are expected to run dry sometime around 2034. Now, I firmly believe Congress will step in before 2034 to fix this, probably through a combination of tax increases and benefit changes. But even if the worst case scenario happened and Congress did nothing, there would still be enough money from ongoing FICA taxes to pay about 75% of promised benefits. Now, frankly, nobody, you, me, Tammy, anybody listening, will be satisfied with 75% of promised benefits. But the idea of, so I'm 62, I'm gonna grab my benefit right now before it goes broke. Well, now you've just taken a haircut of more than 25% because you claimed early. And in the worst case scenario, if there were across the board cuts, then you're going to take another haircut. Is that worth it? My bottom line is don't claim Social Security benefits early out of fear, because it's like selling your stock portfolio in a down market. The only thing you have guaranteed is you have now locked in a loss. If you need the money, that's what it's there for. Go ahead and take it. But don't claim it early because you're worried about something that might happen 13 years from now.
Tammy, boots on the ground knowledge. You deal, you teach, you also do private consulting and whatnot. What do you find surprising when talking to the people? And when do people hear it, when do they get most excited?
Well, there's. It depends on who you're talking to, I guess, Bob, because you'll talk to mid-career employees who a lot of them right now, and we've lived through this pandemic now going on 2 years. We're seeing the vaccination mandate. There's a lot of pressure being put on federal employees to either come back from telework or to do something that's not something they want to do. So we're starting to hear from people who want to jump ship. You know, I want to go do something else. I want to work from home. I don't want to come off of telework, whatever the case might be. So for those employees, I think they need a reality check to understand the value of these benefits that they're going to give up if they leave government early. You know, who wants to give up lifetime health insurance? Who wants to give up 10 more years of that pension benefit? That means you're going to have to save literally hundreds of thousands of dollars more on top of your regular retirement savings to make up for that lost benefit. Because as Mary Beth alluded to earlier, most private sector companies don't offer pension benefits these days. So if you leave federal service, it's unlikely you'll have anything more than a 401k or some type of savings plan. So I really encourage our younger employees who are thinking about a career change to really do some estimates of projecting what that benefit would look like if they stay, and trying to project how much they might need to save extra to make up for that loss. Is it really worth it? So that's the one thing. And when we talk to pre-retirement employees, people who are leaving this year or leaving the end of next year, whenever they're leaving within the next couple of years, they've got a lot of different myths that they've heard over the years, a lot of rumors that go around surrounding the whole topic of retirement planning. So it's anywhere from, do I need Medicare Part B and I don't want to take it because of the high income premium adjustments that happen to Medicare? You'll hear myths about, should I take a survivor benefit if my spouse has their own retirement? So we could spend, you know, a whole session on just one of those various myths. So I feel like my job is not only education, but also myth busting, you know, trying to help people understand the real truth behind some of the things they've heard. And I think Mary Beth does the same thing from the standpoint of Social Security myths as well.
I think we should call Tammy the retirement myth buster. We'll get you a superhero cape.
There we go. I need one of those myth busting guns.
Well, and listen, I don't do near what you all do, but, you know, with regards to tax consulting with clients, they'll come in and say, well, I need to take the Social Security now. I can save the money and I'll be ahead of the game. And I go, yeah, but you have to pay tax on what, 85% of it? Maybe you don't pay state tax, maybe you do. And I said, do you really think that you're going to be able to put it in a separate pot and never touch it? Well, that's what I plan to do. And, you know, most people, given the opportunity, there's another source of income. Maybe I need a newer car more often.
Yeah. Well, you know, a good point on that, Bob, is when you're deciding when to claim Social Security benefit, you know, if you claim it at your full retirement age, you get 100% of what you have worked so hard for and paid so much for in terms of FICA taxes. And for every year you're willing to postpone claiming those benefits up until age 70, you're getting an extra 8% per year. Now, let's talk about that for a minute. We have been living in a near zero interest rate environment for the last decade. Now, we're starting to see signs that inflation's picking up, maybe interest rates are going to pick up. But for right now, if you're in the situation, Bob, you just described, I could claim my benefit now. I don't really need the money. What are you going to do with that? I generally say to people, you have to compare Social Security to a risk-free investment. If I took it at my full retirement age and I didn't need it, where do you put it? Pretty much in the bank. You're getting 0%. If you're willing to wait, you're getting 8% per year. Now, some people may say, well, I'll just take it and invest it. Well, that's great. You might make 20% or you might lose 20%. But when you compare it to a risk-free investment, you're talking zero versus the government giving you 8% a year. Can I tell you a little story of how we got to 8% a year? It's fascinating. It was back in 1983 during Social Security reform, and many people don't realize it, but the head of that bipartisan commission was a guy named Alan Greenspan. Long before he was chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, he chaired the Bipartisan Commission on Social Security Reform. And one of the things the Greenspan Commission said was, you know, Americans are living so much longer, but everybody's collecting Social Security at 62. What can we do to incentivize them to delay? Well, if you go back to 1983, remember, we had interest rates that were 12, 13, 14% and higher. At one point, the prime rate hit 18% with a 3% surcharge. But the delayed retirement credits for Social Security back then were 3%. Who in their right mind would delay collecting for a measly 3% a year? So the bipartisan commission said, okay, let's gradually raise the full retirement of the delayed retirement credit by a half a percentage point each year until it gets to a certain cap. What do you think, guys? 8% sounds pretty conservative to me. Sure, 8%. And we're going to apply it to anyone born in 1943 or later, when they reach their full retirement age. Okay, here's your first math test. 1943 plus a full retirement age of 66, you have 2009. What else happened? Worst stock market crash since the Great Depression. And for the first time, the government saying, I'll give you 8% a year to wait. That's why people talk about Social Security claiming strategies.
Absolutely. And then the one thing I always get from people, I want to know how you'd answer this, Mary Beth, is what if I die early? What if I delay it till 70 and then I die at 72? What's your response to that? And then I can tell you what mine is.
Well, first of all, is you're dead. It all depends on whether you're single or married. I encourage people who are married to have one spouse delay, aside from those public employees that may have offset issues, because even if I die before I claim it, the survivor benefit is going to be based on what I was entitled to at time of death, including any of those uncollected delayed retirement credits. So I would say for a married couple, it still makes sense for one to delay. If you're single, I have very mixed feelings about that. Yes, I think you should wait till your full retirement age, particularly if you're still working, so you don't get affected by earnings restrictions. But is it worth it to delay if you're single? Certainly, you would get a bigger check in the future if you delay. But if you died before you claim benefits, there's no survivor benefit. You don't have a surviving spouse. Presumably, you don't have a surviving minor dependent child. So that money just goes back in the pot. So single people, I say, do you feel lucky? Yes, wait till full retirement age. It's a bit more of a roulette wheel of whether you should wait till 70. It would depend on how much that bigger Social Security check would play into your overall retirement plan.
Yeah, the only thing I would add to that, Mary Beth, is that if I'm talking to whether single or married, I always say, if you die early, you don't need the money anymore. You know, it's unfortunate that you passed away at a young age, but you don't need it. I'm more concerned about, what if I live a long time? What if I live to be 85, 95? And today it's not that unusual to live to be 105. Mm-hmm. And I want to make sure that I can stay financially independent. Even if I'm single, I don't want to have to move in with my kids, and I don't want to have to go on welfare when I'm in my 90s. So I like the idea of delaying it. If I'm still working, for sure. If I'm retired and I need the money, I agree with you to take it. But if I'm retired, there's nothing to say that between 60 and 70, I can't work part-time. I can't do something kind of fun to make 20 or 30,000 a year. That's not that hard to do these days. So I'm a fan of delaying.
And here's another number image for people, a traditional concept of how much can I afford to spend in retirement, roughly 4% a year. So if I have $1 million nest egg in savings, that means I can spend $25,000 the first year. If I'm working part-time and making $25,000 a year, that's money I'm not tapping from my nest egg that is going to continue to grow. So it's going to give me much more money for those later years. And I usually tell people the choice between collecting benefits early and late is, it's not so you can buy a boat at 62. It's so you don't have to eat cat food at 85.
Exactly. So you can live the same lifestyle then that you do today.
All right. I think Andrew says it's time for a break. So we'll let the good folks that are listening know a little bit more about NITP.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away? It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
Welcome back to the final 15 minutes of today's For Your Benefit radio show. And ladies, I got two questions, if you don't mind. I really like to ask these. One I'm not going to do. It's very good, but it's too long. All righty. By the way, this year's bills in Congress for GPO and WEP, W-E-P, in both the House and Senate seem to be close to actually passing. There is minority support in the House and the Senate, 40 co-sponsors. Do you think it'll finally pass this year? That's the question.
We certainly hope it does. However, we've been hoping that for about 35 years. So it's almost like the boy who cried wolf, like maybe someday there will really be a wolf and that law will get passed and people will get some relief from the windfall in the GPO. But I think there's still enough of a reason why those laws are in place that I don't think Congress is acting too quickly to get rid of them. So I don't know, Mary Beth, do you think differently on that one?
I agree with you. Ever since the windfall elimination provision, which affects a public employee's own Social Security benefit if they had worked long enough in the private sector to earn one, that's at least 10 years, and the government pension offset rule, which affects a spouse or a survivor with a public pension who's trying to claim a Social Security benefit on a living spouse or a deceased spouse. These rules, proposals to repeal those two provisions have been introduced every year since the bill was passed in 1983. It is not going anyplace. It's sort of wishful thinking. I would find it hard to believe that something like that would pass on a standalone basis. I think it would have to be as part of overall Social Security reform. And I do not see that happening anytime in the near future. Right now, there's the Social Security 2100 Act that was reintroduced primarily with Democratic sponsorship in the House, which is less about fortifying the long-term financing of Social Security and more about expanding benefits for vulnerable populations, the very old or the very poor or people who took time out of the workforce for caregiving, that they should get some sort of Social Security credits for that. No Republican sponsors in the House. I don't see major Social Security reform happening anytime in the near future. It's a tough call for politicians. Yes, everybody wants Social Security to survive and thrive, but the only way to do it is to either bring in more revenue or cut back on the benefits. Neither one that politicians want to go to their constituents and say, hey, got good news. I'm going to raise your taxes and cut your benefits. Vote for me. So there's not a lot of incentive from a politician standpoint to jump into the fray. Though I think American citizens, every one of us, realize how incredibly important Social Security benefits are. And that has been magnified during the pandemic. When you looked at all the younger working age people who were worried about losing their jobs and not having an emergency fund and not being able to pay their rent, retirees in general did okay because they had these guaranteed sources of income like Social Security and federal retirement benefits that continued regardless of the pandemic. Everybody knows this is important. I think we should be contacting our representatives and senators saying, it's okay to talk about Social Security reform. I'm not going to fire you. We know you have to fix it. And the sooner you start, the better off we'll all be.
Okay. One last question. I think it's
funny sometimes when you talk to a group of younger employees, mid-career or less, they kind of discount Social Security and say they're not even counting on it. We think it's going to be belly up and blah, blah, blah. But when you talk to the pre-retirement group, the ones that see Social Security in the next 5 years in their future, they are definitely counting on it. Without it, where would they be? In fact, if we go back to what the 1930s, wasn't the whole point of Social Security to keep us out of poverty? And I think that's probably part of that vision for Social Security to shore up the least, the lost, and the people that really need the benefit the most.
Exactly. It was created so everyone would have a dignified retirement. Mm-hmm. And it was also an earned benefit. People paid FICA taxes. Now, certainly the ones at the beginning of this got a great deal. I think the first person who received an actual Social Security retirement check was Ida Mae Fuller. And I think she paid a total of about $22 in FICA taxes into the system and lived to over 100. She got a lot more out than she ever put in. But it's a pay-as-you-go system over the generations. There are many of us now who are probably paying more money in FICA taxes than we'll ever see coming out. The people who benefit the most from the system is the classic married couple, one breadwinner, like the families of the 1930s. One worker is putting money in the form of FICA taxes. Two people are taking it out, the retiree and the retired spouse. Right now, you have usually dual income workers paying into the system, and they may never get their full benefits out.
Okay.
And also, I guess the people maximizing it by having children later in life, since if you have children under age 18, or if they're still in high school, they can receive benefits when you apply. If you don't apply, then the kids won't collect.
Exactly. And that, when Bob was asking, what are some of the questions we get? If someone who is retirement age of at least 62 and they have minor dependent children under the age 18 living with them, or disabled adult children, those two categories of children qualify for dependent benefits once the parent claims. So let's say you have a dad who's not working and has a 14-year-old. He may want to claim at 62 so that 14-year-old gets 4 years worth of benefits up till age 18, as opposed to dad waiting till 66 when the child's 18 and would get no benefits. Okay. So certainly having children later in life in the picture, I used to call this the Viagra College Fund. you know, the kids get benefits, you know, put that money, you've just paid for Harvard.
That's right. It's a nice college fund.
Okay, last question. If GPO will eliminate the entire survivor Social Security benefit.
I can't hear Bob.
What? No? Can you not hear me?
But let's talk a little bit more about the trust fund and the concern that money would run out. What are you hearing from your readers, Tammy? Are some of them motivated to claim early because of it?
Yeah, I do hear a lot of people who say, I'm going to get it while the getting's good. I'm afraid it's not going to be there when I need it. But I agree with you, Mary Beth, that that's not a reason to work out of fear, because if you go over the history of Social Security and all the big major amendments that have happened over the years, there's always been a clause that protects those who are ready to claim benefits. You know, that would be so un-American of Congress to say, hey, you've worked for 45 years paying into the system, so we're going to pull the rug out from under you and just automatically cut out your benefit. That's just not going to happen in this America. I don't care about the trust fund running dry. I know Congress will protect us from that type of thing happening. So I think if you're going to delay Social Security, you're doing it from a financial point of view. From all the things we've mentioned as survivor benefits, as longevity risk that plays into that, those are the things that I think people should look at rather than the trust fund issue. The trust fund issue has time to get resolved.
Right. You've got 13 years before it's projected exhaustion. That's a lot of time to get things fixed.
Yep.
And you're right. Traditionally, Congress has always protected current and near retirees. For example, one thought is maybe raising the full retirement age, which is scheduled to go to 67 for people born in 1960 or later, and maybe raise it till 70. But don't panic. We're talking today's two-year-olds. They're going to live to 120. They'll get used to it. And that was the best part of the Social Security reform in 1983, that nearly 40 years later, it is not fully implemented yet, because that last piece of raising the full retirement age to 67 for people born in 1960 or later doesn't really kick in till 2027. That's a good way to make public policy. And speaking of people born in 1960, there's also some good news for them. How Social Security benefits are calculated, we talk about your top 35 years of index earning, and to get really geeky about it, it's the index has a special formula. There was concern that people born in 1960, we thought due to the pandemic that the average wage index would actually decline in 2020, which would result in a less lucrative Social Security benefit formula for those people. Well, good news, despite the pandemic, the wage index actually rose. So those people born in 1960 who have a full retirement age of 67, your benefits are going to be solid. Nothing to worry about.
Nothing's going to go down.
Final question. If GPO will eliminate the entire survivor Social Security benefit received by a surviving CSRS annuitant spouse, then is it prudent to have the non-CSRS annuitant spouse delay benefits beyond 62?
Tammy, I'm going to let you answer that first and I'll jump in.
Well, I think we covered that a little bit towards the beginning of the show. We talked a little bit about the GPO and the windfall provision. I used myself as an example on that one. So I think if you need to learn more about the WEP and the GPO, I think education goes a long way. And Social Security, if you go to ssa.gov, there's a couple of things to look at. The first one is when you go under the homepage, there's a big block that says retirement. So click on retirement, then click on learn. And then you can learn about how federal pensions, how government pensions that weren't covered by Social Security, like our CSRS retirement, can impact your right to your own Social Security because of the windfall, and any right to your spouse's Social Security because of the GPO. So those that learning situation there is really going to help you. The other thing that Social Security has done is they've really upgraded the benefit statement. And I know some people who don't like change. In fact, I kind of looked at it at first and said, oh, I don't know if I like how it looks. But the more I look at it, the more I get used to it. I love how it shows you that graduated benefit from 62 to 70. So you can really see year by year that it's more than just keeping on working. It's also that 8% delayed credit, because there's a big jump from one year to the next, more than you would think there would be. And there's also still a way to get your lifetime history of Social Security earnings. So that gives you a lot of information on what your benefit's going to look like. Plus, it has an expanded area on the windfall provision and the GPO. And there's also a calculator. I use it for my clients all the time to help them see what the windfall provision will do to their Social Security benefit. And oftentimes, it's surprising that they're actually relieved that it didn't wipe it out entirely. They thought, oh my goodness, I'm not going to get anything. And meanwhile, it's a rather small reduction compared to what they're really going to get. So there's a lot of places to learn more about that.
That's a really good point. Social Security does have some excellent learning tools. And the thing to keep in mind for the windfall elimination provision, which affects a worker's own Social Security benefit, it can reduce but not eliminate your Social Security benefit. Think W worker windfall is a way to think of that. When you think of the government pension offset, which can reduce a survivor or spousal Social Security benefit by 2/3 of the amount of that government pension, it can totally wipe out a Social Security benefit. So think of that government pension offset GPO as the grumpy partner provision. Now, the other thought to put on my financial planning hat, the question was, if this GPO offset was eliminated, what should that do to our current claiming strategy? I don't think one should ever factor a potential change in Social Security rules into today's financial planning. It's just not a guarantee. It's like changing your tax strategy based on something that might happen in the future. I really think you should make your plans based on current rules. And if things change in the future, perhaps you can adjust.
We are guaranteed to be done in 30 seconds. So final comments.
Take advantage of everything that Tammy and Bob have to offer, because the best thing for federal retirees is you have access to wonderful retirement planning. You know, get informed to make the best decisions for you.
Tammy?
Yeah, look on the bright side of Social Security. It's a lifetime stream of income, and really consider when you're going to claim it. It can mean thousands of dollars to your future.
Thank you. What an educational show. This should be mandatory listening starting next Monday morning. Thanks. And everybody, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WEPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.